Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, Caroline Foran. This week, I have a guest called Brian Falduto. He is the host of the Gay Life Coach podcast, also probably most prominently known as, quote unquote, that gay kid from School of Rock. He was a child actor. He is a life coach these days. He's a singer-songwriter. He does many things. So Brian reached out to me and asked me to be on his podcast because he's a fan of this podcast and he wanted to share his experience of anxiety. And we got to talking and realized that maybe our conversation could appear on both of our podcasts. So there is a little bit in this episode of me talking through my story, my background, which I know you've heard all before, but then Brian shares with me his story, his experience, which is just so interesting and really quite a recent thing for him. So it's only been in the last year that the anxiety really came to a head for him, and he's been forced to confront it and no longer be in denial about it and the extent at which it was impacting his life negatively. So we have a great chat around anxiety in general, the reasons why we're struggling perhaps more with it these days, so many different mindset changes and things that have helped us, the language changes, as well as sharing both of our stories so far. I think this is probably one of the longer podcasts that I've done, and that I could have just spoke to Brian for so long. He just has such a beautiful way of articulating things, and I need say no more. I will hand it over now to our chat and hope that you get something from it. Thank you as always for listening. Thank you for the reviews and the feedback and for sharing it with anyone who you think it might be relevant for or helpful for. I always so massively appreciate it.
I'm so excited to talk to you. Basically, we're doing an episode around anxiety for my podcast, and your podcast is about anxiety.
Yeah.
This past summer, the anxiety I was dealing with got really difficult. I started to like admit that it was difficult and that I was having a hard time with it. And I was like, I really need to, I think, just start taking a more owning it approach to this. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because I literally just typed into Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts. I was like, owning your anxiety, and your podcast came right up. And there it was, 4 seasons of everything I could possibly need to listen to feel better about my situation. I've gotten my therapist hooked on it a little bit too. I shared some episodes with him.
God, you were spreading me all over the US. That is amazing.
I told him I'm talking to you today and I'm just like so excited because it's been really pivotal.
Thank you. It's like I said before we started recording, just it's incredible to, you know, the goal is if one person can be helped in their day or helped better understand their anxiety or feel less like it's something that they need to obliterate from their life or get rid of, then that's my job done. Mm-hmm. And for you to say that it's been pivotal for you is like, you know, no amount of accolades will ever match up to having that impact on someone. So like, mm-hmm. Thank you so much for reaching out to me. I know you said that you were excited, but like, obviously I'm a School of Rock fan. So I had my own little fangirl moment.
Why do you say obviously? It is a good movie, I'll admit, but it's obvious.
Is it not obvious? I mean, I just think everyone has seen it and everyone loves it. How could you not know? Like, if you've seen it, you love it.
I did luck out. I don't know. I have not met someone who's like, that's a terrible movie. You know,
unless they're a terrible person. There's no way.
Let me start by asking you, what are you grateful for?
Oh, I am grateful for, in the context of what we're talking about, I really am grateful for the horrible time I had with anxiety. It took me a long time to say that, but now looking back, I realize how much it was a signal for me to like open the lines of communication between my mind and my body, which were shut before then. I think they are shut for so many people. And I'm grateful for the incredible level of self-awareness I have, sometimes to my own detriment, that and because of that anxiety, that I know when something is too much for me, or when I know I need to take a step back, or when to push myself. I'm really grateful for the education I've been given through a shit time to know more about myself, what works for me, what doesn't. I really am grateful that I had that experience so young in life as well, because now it's sort of sharpened my focus towards that, which what matters and what doesn't. Yeah. So for example, you know, a lot of my friends are so laser focused on career stuff to the detriment of their well-being. And it's all like, well, how much money can I make? And because I was burned, I suppose, by anxiety, and my well-being became such a high priority, it became so hard for me to get back to a point of being well. Once I got there, now that I am well, like that's the biggest metric for success for me. And I wouldn't have had that awareness had I not had anxiety. So in one way, I am most grateful for that. Obviously, I'm grateful for like my child and stuff. But he's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. Well, no, thank you for sharing. Yeah. I mean, I think your very first episode of your podcast, and by the way, I'm just going to encourage my listeners to listen one more time, because it's just a treasure trove of if you're struggling with anxiety, it's where you should go, in my opinion. But the first episode, you do such a good job at, I don't know, validating the struggle, you know, because it's a struggle. And similarly to everything else I've come out about, everything else that I've owned in my life, the important part of it is that someone else thinks that they're the only one, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have to talk about it so that that person doesn't feel alone anymore. You know, it's very important. And this specifically is so important to talk about.
I think it's such a huge, like top heavy layer of anxiety that people experience, whatever about what you're going through that's specific to you, or, you know, maybe you're in a situation where you're being bullied in school or in work, or, you know, you are in the middle of a big life change. I think everyone experiences the added layer of, what will people think of me? Why am I not coping when everyone else appears to be? And I think the more we normalize it and talk about it and realize that anxiety is something that we're all capable of feeling, we all have a stress response. No, you know, if you're not capable of feeling anxious, you're not a human being.
Yeah.
You know, if you take away the top layer of anxiety there, in terms of like, so what? Like, everyone feels it. It's not, you know, you're not a weirdo for dealing with anxiety. Then that takes the anxiety down several notches, because it's just that fear of judgment and what people think of you. And the irony of feeling like, you know, you're the only one in the world, when that vulnerability is common to us all.
Yeah.
And when we share that away and we allow for that vulnerability, how much that already takes the anxiety and like dissolves it. Mm-hmm. It's so important. And I was really nervous doing that first episode. I had never podcasted before. Yeah. I didn't have any experience in terms of like a structure. I said, I'm just going to try and articulate what I went through, which to me, for so long, I struggled to justify it for so long. I felt like I had no good reason to have experienced anxiety to the extent that I did. I was ashamed. I was embarrassed for a long time that like, I just couldn't cope in a world where everyone would say, well, sure, you've got everything going for you, and what reason do you have to feel anxiety? And I just figured, eventually, maybe I'm not the only person who feels this way, who are grappling with the anxiety that they don't deserve to be feeling the anxiety that they're feeling, which adds another layer of anxiety onto it.
Yeah.
It's like an onion. There's all these different layers. When you peel it back, there's so much going on. And it's not just like, well, the job is causing anxiety, so just leave the job. It's not. Yeah. It's never that simple.
You can correct me if I say anything that you feel is out of line with what you know about anxiety, right? Because I also don't want to ever undermine the severity of someone's personal experience with anxiety, right? Because we all experience it in different ways, but it is very much the monster under the bed in a lot of ways, in that, much like you, all the research that I've done on it and the self-work and the ways in which I've been curious about it, once you learn what it actually is, it's really nothing to be afraid of.
I agree. It's
a very biological, normal thing that's happening inside of your brain and your body. And to be honest, I think that if you're not experiencing anxiety in the world in which we currently live to a degree, I'd be a little more concerned about you because it's a very anxious world.
I completely agree with everything you're saying. I think once you confront the anxiety and you understand the mechanics of it and how it works and why it's happening for you, that is more than half the battle, and it takes the horns off it in a way. And I also believe that I've recently been changing another element of my mindset around anxiety. And like, you know, we all are owning our anxiety to a certain extent, but we all would like not to feel it. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But when you think about our ancestors and cavemen, cavewoman days, the people, we come from a long line of worriers and overthinkers and overanalyzers. And they were
the smart people.
The people who were super chilled and laid back and never had a care in the world, they were the ones who got eaten by the saber-toothed tiger when they were just chilling on the savannah one day. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, so that's not good. We were the smart ones. We have managed to sustain life up until now. And that is something to be proud of and be like, well, you know, that's the reason we're here, is because we overthought situations to know to get out of harm's way. And yes, sometimes our minds are a little bit over-vigilant or hyper-vigilant when they don't need to be, but we're working with ancient circuitry there that you have to work with and not against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if you're into Glennon Doyle's work at all.
I'm familiar.
Okay. I love the way she describes, because she's just friends with a lot of artists and creatives, as am I, and I am one. And I love the way that she talks about how most of the people she knows has to some degree what society would label as mental illness. And she's like, I'm not even remotely interested in having conversations with people who aren't slightly mentally ill. If these are the mentally ill people, right? If these things that we're experiencing, which are very normal reactions to normal is a terrible word, right? But just sensitive reactions, heartfelt reactions, emotional reactions to this world that we're living in, you know, it's, I just love the way that she phrases it. And she's been super helpful in validating all this for me as well.
I mean, the truth of it is that I think what she's probably getting at is that, like, it's more the minority of people who don't experience it. So we need to, like, let go of the feeling of being othered by anxiety.
Yeah. Well, I want to just give my listeners a little bit more of a background on you.
Okay.
You said you had never done a podcast before your first episode, but you had written a book, right?
I had written two books.
And now there's like four. You gotta chill out, girl.
Yeah. So there's three published books. And then I made a journal based on like more of like a workbook based on the first book. So the first book was about very much about anxiety and how, like, that was called Owning It over here. It's called Own It in the US for some reason.
What do you make of that?
It's really annoying because people who follow me from America or Canada will see me post about my book in the UK and Ireland, and they'll go and buy both of them. And I'm like, no, they're the same, except for how I spell the word color is different. And then the same with my second book was called The Confidence Kit here. But in America, they were like, let's call this You Got This. And I was like, okay, but they're the same book as well. So it is
interesting.
Different cover. I think it's just a little bit more, like, in Ireland, our vibe wouldn't be as You Got This. It would be more your grand, you know, we were not as punch the air positive as I think they wanted the book to be in America.
Well, that's actually a great point, because when I'm experiencing anxiety, what I no longer tell myself is You've Got This. I've changed my inner mantra is now You're okay.
Yeah. Because sometimes you don't got it and it's fine.
You don't have to go get it. The anxiety usually comes from the pressure to go get it, you know?
Exactly. I know. Like I say, some days you're not owning it, you're just renting it.
Was it intimidating writing the book while you were still sort of, because even these podcast episodes, it's intimidating, like, approaching topics, right? When I don't have most things figured out, right? So sometimes the podcast episode is me still figuring things out in real time, you know? So
yeah. And I say that all the time, like, to this day, that, like, I'm not the expert, I'm figuring things out. It's like, oh, we're always learning. And I just set that up from page one. I just said, listen, I'm not an expert. I'm going to share what has worked for me and what hasn't worked for me, what I have learned from different experts, and just try to, like I say, bridge that gap between these neuroscientific texts and these, you know, people who are really struggling. I've always been very clear about that, look, I'm not saying this is what you need to do. I'm saying this is what helped me. I don't know. I can't say for sure that it will help you. So I didn't find it intimidating once I kind of set that out. And I did think that it would go against me because I'm not an expert, but actually it worked in my favor because people wanted to hear from someone who they could relate to, who, you know, they were like, oh, well, she's just like me. She's just trying to go about her day and her work life. And I wanted so desperately to hear from someone who had felt the full brunt of anxiety to the extent that I had and who came out the other side and said, like, I manage it really well now. And I promise you that you will too. I would have paid millions for that. I don't have millions. Yeah. I would have done it. I would have found it for someone to give me that reassurance. So I just figured that if I really needed that, then other people might as well. But to be honest, people always say, oh, it must have been so hard to share so much because I share everything. Like, I'm very much an open book, but I never find that intimidating because it's a coping mechanism of mine to share. And when I share, I guess I'm craving and I'm looking for reassurance from other people who will say, oh my God, me too. I have felt the same. And that gives me so much strength and that helps me to further normalize it. So I've always really gravitated towards sharing and toward putting my hand up and saying, hey, is this just me or anybody else? And thankfully, you know, people have responded in their droves to say, you know, wow, I'm the exact same.
A question I've been wanting to ask you, when in your very first episode, I remember, I feel like a stalker, but you said that you were very passionate about finding a bullshit-free approach to handling anxiety. And I think one of the things you quoted as being like, you weren't invalidating it by any means, but you quoted it as being maybe not something you were interested in at the moment was like the chakras, for example, right?
Yeah.
Because it's you wanted something a little more to the core. But then your podcast over the four seasons or however many episodes there's been now has really explored all the different corners of approaching anxiety. Has your philosophy changed on what works at all or?
Not really. My philosophy is still very much like stop trying to get rid of it. Stop trying to cure it. Start like the assess and address approach, which is the foundation of my book and really the foundation of my podcast is to assess. So to understand what is anxiety? Why am I feeling it? Why is this happening for me in particular? And then address is all the different things we can do to help calm the anxious response down. And then within the address part, you can open it up to whatever works for you. So for me, I needed to really rebalance my hormones and help myself sleep again. And like getting up and saluting the sun was just not going to cut it for me at the time. I needed something really, I needed to really go back to basics of, you know, eat and sleep. And I needed medication as well at the time because I just could not get my head above water. But then if someone is, you know, at a point of just managing it and being well, but wanting to keep things in check and taking a moment out for themselves, then it can be anything and everything, whatever works for you, as long as it's, you know, safe and legal. Because I've realized that's, and I talk about this, I do have a chapter in my first book where I look at some different kind of alternative therapies. And really, it doesn't matter what you're doing, because as long as it has the effect of downregulating your stress response, then everything has the same goal. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's understanding it first. There's no point in trying to slap a yoga class on the end of your day when you have so much stress and you don't understand, you know, you're not going to get anywhere, or trying to have a self-care moment when like there's smoke coming out of your ears. You need to start by assessing it and understanding what you're dealing with, why it's happening, how normal it is, how the physiology, all of that education piece is so important. And only then will you benefit from addressing it.
Yeah.
And when you address it, that can be anything from, you know, CBT. It can be just having less caffeine in your day, or it can be lining up your chakras or whatever works for
you. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get a little emotional because I was about to agree with you that the addressing part is so important. And there's emotion behind that for me, just because the understanding of what it is truly was probably one of the more pivotal moments in my dealing with it. In that, you know, I feel like I spent so long afraid of even being diagnosed with anxiety, which to this day, I have not been on like a clinical level, right? But it's like it, even regardless, it was like this this fear that there's something wrong with me, right? And in reality, there's something very right with me. You know,
exactly.
So it's the addressing part is so important. So
that's the assess part, is to try and understand, and then the address of the things that you do to help bring it down. Yeah, I mean, that fear of like, and you mentioned there about like a clinical diagnosis, and obviously there's a whole framework in medical world of people being diagnosed and being told they have this disorder, that disorder. I have always shied away from that personally, because I think a good majority of people, it won't apply to everyone, but a good majority of your listeners and my listeners maybe don't have a disorder, but just are prone to anxious thinking or anxious spirals or anxious patterns. And if you apply a label onto someone that says, you know, oh, you have this anxiety disorder, you might take that as kind of a sentencing to be like, I can never be anything but this, or it might define you. And for me, anxiety is something that pops up now and again in my life. It does not define my life now that I'm at a point of managing it. And I think sometimes those labels can go against people. And I think I really want people to know that, yes, you can have periods in your life where you experience heightened anxiety and it can be really crippling, but that does not mean to say it's going to, you know, be looking over your back shoulder every day for the rest of your life.
Yeah. I picked this up from Tara Brach, who's like a Buddhist meditation teacher and psychologist. And I no longer refer to it as my anxiety, or I try not to. I refer to it as the anxiety, because it really is a universal thing that we are all dealing with.
Exactly. I mean, that's those language changes and those mindset changes are so powerful to just, you know, like, I'm the same. Like, I never say like, oh, I have anxiety. Like, I don't have like this anxious ball beside me. Like, I have a heartbeat. That's what I have. And, you know, sometimes it's more stimulated than others, and sometimes it's more strained than others, but it's not this thing you're dragging around with you.
Yeah.
And that's really important.
I love that you stress in the addressing part, that it's about whatever works for you. Cause that's very much the theme with my podcast as well. And with my coaching, nothing, I think the whole reason coaching exists is because not everything's going to, like, if there was one thing that worked for everyone, I'd be out of a job, right? Because like, we have to figure out what works for you.
I feel like the wellness industry really sprang up out of, as a response to people being burnt out and super stressed, and all this self-care talk all the time. And sometimes I feel like it's just, you know, shoved down people's throats, and they're just trying to add on self-care and add on wellness. And they're trying to subscribe to an idea of wellness that looks good on social media or sounds good, or, you know, like, I remember just so voraciously consuming articles from Mind Body Green, and I loved that website, and it could have been 15 articles a day of different ways that I should be taking care of myself. What was meant as the antidote became part of the problem. And I think that people need to sometimes take a break from self-care even, and be like, you know, we can't be constantly trying to better ourselves and improve ourselves. Some days we need to just curl up and watch shitty TV, and that is ironically kind of self-care. We need to find, like, the word self is in self-care. It's so important that it's what works for you, because otherwise you're going to start being hard on yourself if you don't achieve it. You're going to start, it's a tool to measure your self-worth against, and that can become really detrimental. So whatever works for you is, as long, like I say, as long as it's not harming you, that's all that matters. And for me, it really is, honestly, like, at the moment, my ultimate moment of self-care is like getting under my duvet and watching some Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Amazing. I'm glad that's popular over there.
This is a niche, a small but loud group of us who are fans. Well, I am dying to hear about your experience.
Yeah.
Because you had said it's really only something in the last year that you had started to vocalize. Do you mind me asking what age you are?
I'm 29.
29. I don't know why I just knew you were going to say that. Maybe because I Googled you beforehand. So only really in your late 20s, you're like, hold on a second, maybe there is something going on underneath the hood here.
Yes, but it's one of, you know, recently I was actually talking in therapy, and I sort of compared my journey with anxiety to my journey with being gay, in that I think we really underestimate the power of denial. And that, you know, so I was in School of Rock when I was, that came out when I was 11. Mm-hmm. And immediately I was called the gay kid from School of Rock, right? So for the next 14 years, and I didn't even know if I was gay. I didn't even know what being gay was at the time. All I knew is that it was an insult, right? Because it was 2003, and there was very little LGBTQ referencing items in the media besides myself. And it was just... and I remember people would use gay to insult you. They would use it alongside words like girly and wimpy and crybaby, right? Things to make you feel like you were not measuring up to the other boys in your class, right? And so to be instantly referred to as the gay kid from School of Rock not even knowing if I was gay, and only having just like been myself in the movie, was really hard. It was quite traumatizing. And I think what was beautiful about my character is that so many young boys were able to watch the film and be like, oh my gosh, there's someone sassy and effeminate and just like me, right? And who isn't afraid to speak his mind and be accepted for it, right? But my real life was nothing like that. I went back to school where I was told how unacceptable I was, right? So it was,
and it's such a formative age. I mean, it's hard enough at any age, but to be 11, like, because at that time of your life you haven't even really fully developed the part of your brain that helps you rationalize and be logical. You, like, at that point it's all experiences that are getting lodged in your brain for the future.
Yeah. And then, like, before I even had any idea as to whether I liked boys or not, I just knew, I said to myself, you will never be gay. Like, right. I became homophobic to the extent that I suppressed even the notion of being gay. Right. So it was like, by the time I did potentially have feelings for boys, I already hated that part of myself. And I said, absolutely not. Right. And I didn't come out until senior year of college.
What age was that?
8 years ago. So 21. Okay. The reason I kind of compare my anxiety story to my coming out story is that I think clearly anxiety accompanies this inner narrative that there's something inherently wrong with me, right? Mm-hmm. Anxiety is going to naturally accompany that. I actually just helped my parents move and I discovered a journal in one of my old memory boxes. And I remember on your first episode of your podcast, you talked a lot about the physical reactions you were having. And I actually experience a lot of repression when I try and talk about my younger days, things I've like blocked out. But I remember now, as I was reading back in my journal, I used to come home from school with migraines, with body aches. I think that my body was really taking a toll from the amount that I was trying to convince people that I was not just the gay kid from School of Rock, right?
All of the resistance that you were creating in your body just from resisting what is. And that's often like the biggest roadblock with anxiety, is just resisting what is. And it's mad how much energy you can create in your body just like with that resistance, isn't it?
Yeah. And then I went to high school and I thought maybe everything would change, right? But the moment I walked into high school, I heard the whispers, is that the gay kid from School of Rock? And, you know, we talked at the beginning of this, how I lucked out being in a popular movie, but I also didn't luck out. Cause even when I went into college, one of the first people I saw on campus was like, were you in a movie? So it followed me everywhere I went.
Did you hate it at the time?
Oh, I hated it for so long. I remember in college, someone came up to me in the cafeteria and was like, I heard you hate it when people ask you about School of Rock. And I was like, well, I don't hate it. I don't ask you about what you did when you were a kid, you know?
Yeah.
so it's, but I've grown to love it because of when I talk about it now, it means something to people, you know?
Yeah. And you've now kind of owned the experience and you've taken it all back. Like, you know, even I think when we first started messaging you, you introduced yourself as that gay kid from School of Rock.
Yeah. I'm like,
which is amazing.
Hey, this is who I am. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, it's a reference point, and I think it cuts to the core of what's going on here. And
you went to college, yeah?
Well, actually, I went to high school.
Oh, high school.
I remember,
yeah.
I have early images of me in high school, like with hand sanitizer at the top of my locker. And I know that that's not a sign of anxiety, but I was very actively, like, in between every class, like I had this intense hand cleaning ritual, and I would like spritz my face with this thing, and just, I had to be perfect, right? I was constantly adjusting my uniform so that there was this massive fear of imperfection, right? And
these were the imperfections that you could control.
Yeah. And then what was interesting is that the ways in which I was controlling them, I also felt shame about, because I knew that they weren't like cool. Like, it wasn't cool to like wash your hands like every 5 seconds. Well, now it is because of COVID, but you know, or like,
you were just ahead of the game.
You know, and it wasn't cool to be like adjusting your uniform. It was cool not to care, right? But I cared an insane amount, in my opinion. I cared too much. And so I started to find this balance of not caring, or like appearing like I'm not caring, but perfect, but caring intensely inside about what people thought of me. But I wouldn't call it anxiety until like this past year, which I just think goes to illustrate the power of denial, because I was also like, you already have this one thing wrong with you. Like when I was younger and I knew that I couldn't be gay, I was like, you are already wrong. You cannot have another thing wrong with you that you need to fix, because it would be too much. You know what I mean?
And actually the anxiety was because of the resistance. So they were, you know, you probably felt like they were two separate things that you were dealing with, but they were one and the same.
Yeah. And then, you know, the body keeps the score, right? So now all these years later, I still experience anxiety. Well, we all experience anxiety, but this past summer, I was having a really tough go of it for several weeks. I kept getting stuck in that loop that I know you talk about, the mind body loop, where, and you know, what's kind of been the fix for me. And I was so excited to listen to your episode about it.
Which one?
Acupuncture.
Oh, no way. Yeah. That was a big deal for me as well.
So helpful. The very first night that I got back from acupuncture, I remember my brain was doing its usual overthinking anxiety thing, but my body was not participating. And it was so cool. My brain got bored because it was like, I don't have your body on board anymore to torture you, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing.
I thought it was a really cool experience.
Yeah. For me, the acupuncture just really helped with the physical symptoms, just calming down, like just the intensity of the physical anxiety. And for me, like helping just restore balance to my hormones to be able to sleep, which, you know, is such a huge driver of anxiety. If you're not sleeping, like it all feeds into one. But yeah, it's not many people who reference like acupuncture as something that, well, I know was a thing that I did religiously at the time, but it's cool that it helped you.
Yeah. I mean, underneath all this, there was also a lot of frustration. Like when I finally learned what anxiety is, right? I'm like, I don't think I would have accepted it if someone told me because of all the denial, but I was like, why has no one put it in these words for me? Right. Like why has it been all this time treated as something that's like a mental illness? Right.
Yeah. And because our perceptions of anxiety would be like movies and TV where someone like completely loses their mind and has such visceral panic attacks or locks himself in a room. Like that's one end of the spectrum, you know, but anxiety can show up in lots of different ways. Like there's so many common mind traps that people wouldn't identify as, you know, part of anxiety, but they are, like overthinking or personalization, where you always think someone's bad mood is about you, or like they're all little like loops, like I say, that we can get stuck in that are perhaps anxiety. It's a way that anxiety is showing up for us in a way that we need to address something else that's going on.
Yeah.
And I guess for so long, you didn't think you had anxiety because nobody articulated it in the way that could just feel like a sense of just general uneasiness throughout your day. Like that's all it can be. It doesn't have to be a complete meltdown in the middle of your classroom where you have to get sent home. It's just trying to find these little ways to cope and control what you can control so that you feel like you can get through the day.
Yeah. And I also grew up in a very temperamental home, you know, and there was a lot of, there was just a lot of, and I mean, we all saw me in the movie, right? I was a determined little bugger, and I feel like I'm so grateful for that. Right. Because even to this day, letting my therapist in on the fact that I have anxiety, or that I'm dealing with anxiety was difficult, because the part of me was protective of it. Like I've been dealing with this by myself almost impeccably for however long that I've been dealing with it, right? Obviously not as good as I thought I was, right? But it's, I felt like almost like a protective mother of like my kid, right? I was like, I've been dealing with this since before, like I even admitted to having it, right? So it's like, or admitting that it's something that I'm dealing with. So it's like, I don't know if you've ever had that experience, that you're very like protective of it.
Yeah, there's comfort in the discomfort, because that's your familiar place.
Yeah, like you don't even know what I've been through or like what I've managed to control. You know what I mean?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So you obviously mentioned that, you know, you became almost homophobic towards yourself before you came out. So there's obviously a lot of shame there internalized. Do you think that you have struggled more with the shame around being gay or the shame around anxiety?
Oh, the shame around being gay, I think lives in a lot of, or just around being queer lives in a lot of queer people their entire life, right? Yeah. I think it's something that you learn to live with and to love these parts of yourself and to try and emerge as a more authentic, self-accepting version, right, of yourself. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely say the shame around being gay was like the big one, but I've been out for, wow, has it only been 8 years now? That's crazy. And I'm, you know, I'm the gay life coach, right? Yeah, I'm like, I work with a lot of people to develop confidence and acceptance and authenticity. And I think that's part of the determined little bugger I described. When I realized that I was gay, and then I realized also that I had no level of self-love, I quickly deep dove into, okay, so how does one love oneself? How does one start to heal from all this kind of stuff?
And how did that impact the anxiety when you became more accepting of that part of yourself?
I think the anxiety became clear in that some of the biggest tools with healing my shame have been like mindfulness and meditation and being and presence. I take a very spiritual approach to my work often, you know, and just mindful awareness. And that's also the work that I do in coaching. But awareness is a beautiful tool because it's our greatest agent for change, but it also is a little bit of a double-edged sword because being aware doesn't necessarily mean that you're not suffering. You can be aware of your suffering and still be suffering. And so I just started to increase my awareness to the point that it became undeniable that there's an element here that I'm not addressing. You know what I mean?
So the anxiety in itself didn't improve for you just because you came out?
Well, my first couple of years of the closet, absolutely not, because, and I've talked publicly about this often, you don't get to flip a switch on 14 years of hating yourself, right? Yeah. So instead, what happened is I immediately started to gain approval in all these different ways and or try and prove myself in all these other ways, right? How many successful could I be in a successful relationship as a gay man, right? Or like could I be the most impressive looking gay man, or all these different ways to then prove myself, almost because you spend your whole life saying you're not going to be this thing and then you are this thing, so how do you make up for it, almost, you know?
How do you justify it? I suppose you're trying to look for, we're always looking for that justification of how we are as we are, you know, just to be as we are. We're trying to justify it all the time.
Yeah. And then, you know, I feel like I've aged a lot in the past 8 years, but I also feel like my outlook is simpler. I'm more accepting of my situation. I'm not as competitive. I'm not,
Are you less hard on yourself?
Oh yes, much so. Self-compassion, as you've talked about a lot, has been such a beautiful tool. I think that awareness and self-compassion are together really the most powerful ways we can address these things.
So how has the anxiety been manifesting for you in recent years? Like you said that you had a hard time over the summer. How is it showing up for you? And are you more clear on where that's coming from now? Or do you think it always goes back to the same source?
Yeah, the source, I think, changes. But often, not really. I mean, yes and no. It's my anxiety tends to mainly focus around doing, overdoing, my to-do list, getting overwhelmed, overthinking. You also have to remember that an element of being a child actor is that I was professionally working at age 11. So I've...
Yeah, unthinkable for most people, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I had I had mono after the movie because I remember that's like how exhausting of an experience it was. You know, wow. I think my body just like took a toll. And then, yeah, I mean, and I just haven't, I hadn't stopped, you know. Then I went to college for theater. I got out of college. I not only was trying to be the best gay man out there, but I was also working in radio, and I decided to become a singer-songwriter, and I started to release music, and I was doing off-Broadway shows and regional credits and
doing a lot.
Just doing, holding a bunch of things up at once. And then, you know, I've never said this out loud on my podcast, but I remember when the pandemic hit, part of me felt grateful. Mm. Obviously, I was very anxious about the world because I think I'm a good person, right? But I was so grateful that I was being told that all I had to do was sit home and that was the best thing I could do right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that you weren't alone in it because the whole world was slowing down with you and we could all just breathe a sigh of relief for a moment.
Yeah, I was like, you have to slow down. And I had already been very invested in slowing down work, you know, but
yeah.
There's the whole knowing in your mind and then knowing in your body, right? And I mm-hmm. knew in my mind that I needed to slow down, and I was reading all the books and doing all the meditation, right? But it's to actually slow down, you know, is a whole different story.
And how did that make you feel then when you slowed down in your mind?
Well, I mean, the reason we're all moving so fast, I think, is because we don't like what's going through our mind.
I know, but you want to get away from it all the time. That's why mindfulness and meditation is so hard for people who are struggling with anxiety, because you want to get out of the moment when the yeah. key is to just allow for the moment that you're in.
We're all, most of us, the majority of the planet is operating unconsciously, right? To avoid being, which is so ironic, because if we just were to be present, that is the only state in which pure joy, peace, and happiness can arise. You can have like circumstantial peace, joy, and happiness, but it will always be short-lived if it comes from a state of unconsciousness or a state of doing. Whereas if you're living in a present, mindful way and actually understanding that joy, peace, and happiness come from within, that is really the only way to guarantee yourself long-term happiness. And these are things that I believe on a mental level, right? But I'm trying to do the work of yeah. being the human that embodies those things. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's definitely easier to just conceptualize them and reflect on these ideas and stuff than to actually put them into action is really, really difficult. And I think especially for an anxious mind, it's very hard to be. I think I really hated that for a long time. I remember reading Eckhart Tolle's book about just, you know, when his first chapter was like, and I just sat there and I just looked at the tree and I became one with the tree and all my anxiety of all my years just completely fell away. And I was like, I hate you. It's not that simple. And this is so frustrating because I'm trying to be present. And actually, I want nothing more than to be not in this moment right now, because it's so grim that I think that it's particularly hard to get to a point of being able to sit with the shit feelings of anxiety and be like, let this happen, let it happen. Because what, like, and trying just to listen.
And I don't know that this past summer, for example, the, like, it wasn't working. I do consider myself fairly, I don't know if this is even like a real saying, but fairly skilled at meditation or mindfulness tools. Right. But yeah. none of it was, if you're in a wave of cyclical anxiety, it is really hard to sit down and not be anxious.
Really hard.
Really, really hard. And so, the acupuncture was pivotal for me. And I, there's a lot of routes people can take. And if they listen to your podcast, they'll discover them all, right? There's a lot of different ways to step out of that cycle.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think one of the things I love that Eckhart Tolle says in that book is that his suffering was so intense. And Byron Katie too, she's a spiritual thought leader. And her suffering was so intense. And often if you think that you're so far away from ever being like present or just in a state of being or at peace with yourself, because you just have so much going on in your mind, actually conversely, sometimes the suffering might make you more susceptible to being able to step out of that because you have more to like work out off of, like you have mm-hmm. more tangible, feelings of inadequacy or tangible narratives that are going through your mind that you can hold in your hand and actually step out of, you know what I mean? Does that make any sense how I'm illustrating that?
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the denial element of it. And I'm curious, was there a moment that the anxiety got so difficult that you had no choice but to confront it and say, look, I need to do something about this now? Like, what was that moment and what was going on in your life at that time?
You know, and you know what's so funny is that even when I was closeted, I remember, like, I would go and meet up with boys and but we would just hang out to the point where I could leave that experience and be like, well, that wasn't gay. I like, denial is really tricky, right? Like, I was able to convince myself that, like, what we did was just something friends would do, right? Mm-hmm. And similarly, like, for many years, I joked, like, oh, my anxiety, you know, I use it as a joke, like culture uses it, right? We talk about it as, oh my gosh, my anxiety is keeping me from doing this, right? Or it's keeping me all high strung and blah, 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 blah. But actually admitting that it was something I was suffering from was like a totally different layer. Mm-hmm. And that came, yeah, there was like, I don't know, 6 to 8 weeks this summer where I was, every day I was on edge and I wasn't sleeping and I was constantly tired and I couldn't think straight. And I was crying a lot. I had a lot of panic attacks. I was also working a really stressful job at the time. A job where I was in service to others in really high stakes situations. And so I was taking on that too. And yeah, my life for a while just became about trying to not suffer.
Yeah, just trying to get through the day. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that's all you can do. And then you reached a point where you said, okay, I need to try and understand this. I need to try and confront this and get on top of it.
Yeah, pretty much. And I walked into therapy and I was like, I want to have a conversation as if I'm admitting that I have anxiety, right? Like, as if you've diagnosed me.
Yeah.
Can we talk about it in that sense? Because I think he had also been really sensitive to the fact that I was worried about this idea that there's something wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, you know, I think I'm lucky to have found a therapist that isn't really like quick to diagnose anyone or anything, right? Yeah. So it's like, you know, he wanted to talk about it when I was ready to talk about it. And I was like, let's talk about this as if this is something that I cannot escape, right? That I need to face. And he was like, this feels like a big conversation for you. And I was like, yeah, I think this is going to be big. And then it was, and then actually that kind of was also though a bit triggering in that the anxiety was so excited to have more anxiety to focus on.
Yeah.
Admitting it did not at first make it better.
No.
Made it much, much worse.
Yeah.
And then understanding it was a huge tool. And then I was just about to, you know, maybe go see a psychologist and go for medication. I had listened to your medication episode and I, of course, was suffering some of the stigma that society has around medication, which mm-hmm. Thank you for that episode because it's been super helpful and I've done a lot of other research as well. But I was also, I guess, I don't know if this was denial or not, but I was also like, I'm not always anxious. It does come in waves for me.
Yeah.
And I did ask my therapist and he was like, I don't know that you have the symptoms of clinical anxiety. And I had been curious about acupuncture for a long time. I'm such a believer in Eastern medicine to begin with. And I, you know, that's the stuff I read. That's the stuff I coach through. And I was like, let me just try acupuncture. And then sure enough, it was really pivotal along with your podcast.
But so much of that, apart from just like listening to the podcast or doing acupuncture, was just the fact that you put yourself back in the driving seat and you were curious about the anxiety and about, you know, trying to just better understand it. And often that curiosity piece is such a huge part of managing it and owning it and turning in towards it and saying, okay, what's going on here? Like, I hear you, I see you, I know that you're trying to point me. Anxiety is always a signal that you need to pay attention to something. Mm-hmm. But so much of where how you've you know, gotten to a point of owning it is really just being willing to tease it apart and unpack it and ask yourself the tough questions and sit with the shit feelings and mm-hmm. try different things, and the self-compassion, which sounds like you are really good at, which is amazing, because when I was trying to first get on top of anxiety myself, that was like the last thing I ever got to. I mean, I was so hard on myself, and I've talked about this so much, but it's just so much easier to be self-critical because we think that that will be self-motivating. We think right. like tough love will just make the anxiety pop out of us or make us just get up and get on with it. And actually what we're doing is we're further stimulating the stress response. And this was mind-blowing for me because I always thought self-love, I was like, you know, the way I was in the beginning of the book, I was like rolling my eyes, being like, just bloody well, tell me what to do to make it better. But actually, like when I understood the science of the neuroscience of yeah. how self-compassion can, when you say to yourself, okay, like this is how I'm feeling, like how can I help myself right now? What yeah. would make me feel better? What's one thing I could do right now or today that would make me feel a little bit lighter? And how unbelievably powerful that is at like a biological level. That was like, that's probably the most recent and the last piece of the puzzle for me in terms of really anxiety being something that barely knocks a feather out of me anymore because I'm just so okay with it. It's yeah. because of my ability to be able to say, it's okay that you feel this way. Of course you feel this way. Look what's going on right now. Look, yeah. you're just getting through, you know, we're all just living through a global pandemic, which we constantly underestimate. And I'm sure that had something even on a subconscious level to do with what you were experiencing over the summer.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And especially because this summer things were, we were re-emerging. I wrote an article about it actually and published it. It was, about how everyone, it was about this past Pride and they went to go celebrate. And it was one of my first times being out in public and around everyone. And everyone just seemed like they hadn't just spent a year and a half scattering themselves all over their apartments and unpacking who they are. And I'm like, has everyone else not been like deeply sitting with themselves for a year and a half? And are they just able to pack all that back up and act like it hasn't been happening? And I was like, no, I still feel like all my shit is all over the place and I need a moment. Yeah. And so it was tough. Yeah. To further your point though, about the, just like this whole, the self-compassion element, I still think that the language we're using around this, we're still in the minority. Cause if you think about it, like the majority of society is still based around this idea of doing. We are a completely forward moving society. Even coaching is meant to be a forward moving process, right? But I try and get my clients to pause, be present with what's going on, and then we move forward from there, right? Not just mm-hmm. keep moving forward off of the existing issue.
Yeah, I think we're all very afraid of staying still because we're afraid, like culturally, from like of the idea of a plateau being a negative thing and mm-hmm. staying still. And like, you know, that's what propelled me into that job that didn't suit me very well when my anxiety really came to a head. It was, things were actually at the time very good. I was in a very good place. I was really enjoying my job. I was being challenged in the positive ways. But I thought, because we all have this belief that life has to be difficult yes. in order for us to be improving and moving forward, that I then thrust myself into a situation that wasn't good for me. And I think that's a huge, huge thing. It's this cultural obsession with, you know, oh, well, if I'm not being challenged, then I'm stagnating. Or if I'm not moving forward, then I'm just going to fall off the face of the earth. And I think there's a cultural shame around, you know, just being for a while. And like, whether that's just in the moment or whether that's like letting yourself just kind of sit into something comfortable in your career and just get your paycheck and enjoy your weekends and enjoy, you know, that yeah. seems like so in yeah. the 90s and the noughties of like, you know, the end goal and all this kind of stuff that we talk about, like that would have just unheard of. And now I think it's starting to change in that.
Right. But being forced to, we don't have an option
anymore.
Yeah,
we have no choice.
If we keep going, we're going to, you know, the world's going to end. but I mean, even recently I asked one morning, I was just like, out of curiosity, I had never done it before. I said, hey, Google, which is, it didn't go off. Okay. I was like, share with me an inspiring quote. And the quote it shared was like, if you're not blah, 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 you better do this. Like, and it was very like motivating and yeah. like get up and get out of bed kind of thing. And I was like, oh my gosh, could you leave me alone? I was hoping for yeah. something like, you're already great.
I know, like Google just shamed you first thing in the yeah. morning.
And I was like, no.
And how does it feel for you now? I mean, it is such a recent thing for you to have kind of had that hard time.
Yeah.
Why do you think you find it difficult being as as open and as you are, and being a life coach and being spiritual and being connected to, you know, all these different Eastern philosophies, why do you think you find it hard? Is it because of that comfort in the discomfort of anxiety? Or do you feel that if you talk about it and you put it out there, you're kind of letting go of it or something? And that's a bit of a scary prospect.
Well, I also just think that there's so much stigma. I know that just 8 months ago, I was afraid to talk about it because I didn't want to admit that it was something I struggled with, because I didn't want someone to think that there was something wrong with me.
Were you afraid of how it would affect your work? Like, would you be less likely if you, as a singer-songwriter, or if you were acting or something, like, would people be like, oh, we better not, because he might just be a flight risk or something? Like, is that a cause for concern?
Well, no, what's so interesting, Caroline, and I don't know if this is interesting to you, I hope it is, but it's like, the anxiety has been there every step of the way as my work as an artist. It got so bad
for most artists.
Yeah, it got so bad that to the point in college, on audition days, when we auditioned for like the school's main stage productions, I could not, I woke up and I instantly like puked. I had like digestive issues. I could not keep food down because I was on this campus where not only were we supposed to be theoretically doing this art form that's supposed to be fun, but we were getting a degree out of it. We had to be the best so that when we graduated, we got representation, right? There was all these competitive elements to it. It was no longer something I was just doing for fun, like when I was a kid, right? Mm-hmm. I put so much pressure around it. And I recently had a really emotional breakthrough in acting class. I'm in acting class to this day. And for 3 years now, my acting teacher has been like, your work is beautiful, but there's a layer of anxiety to it. You can see it in your work. It's interfering with how raw and present you could be as a storyteller. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I feel everything that I'm saying in the moment of the scene, and I'm having the full emotional experience, but it's sitting right beneath a layer of anxiety where it could be so much more powerful if it just sat by itself.
It's like your threat response was activated when you were younger and when people were saying all those mean things to you in school, and you are still in a major protective mode by having this layer of anxiety to keep an element of the world outside that's coming through your classes. That's your anxiety has kind of become your coping mechanism in some ways.
Absolutely. And, you know, because of the work I've been doing as of late, I recently, and I felt it, my classmates felt it. At the end of class, we had to go around and cap one person, right? And it's really rare to sweep the room with caps, right? But everyone in the class was just like, Brian, we saw you get beneath that layer that we've seen in you for like 3 years now. And it was such a powerful storytelling experience for me as an artist. And it felt so beautiful because not only was it like the payoff of all my work as an artist, but it was the payoff of my personal work too, because without my work on the anxiety I'm experiencing, I wouldn't have been able to do that. You know what I mean?
I mean, that must have been a huge moment for you.
Oh, so cool.
That's amazing to have. I mean, you could write a whole other book on acting class as a way to help own your insecurities and your anxieties.
Oh, I truly believe everyone should take an acting class. It's the best way, I think, that people can become emotionally intelligent and develop a sense of self-knowledge.
And like, to be honest, nothing terrifies me more than the idea of an acting class like that. Even though I'm all about owning our vulnerability, that level of stripping back and being so willing to be judged and torn apart is something that I feel like I would just crumble at. But I'm sure it would be life-changing even from like a purely anthropological sort of experience.
Yeah. I mean, you're doing improv in this podcast, you know, so you're doing the art form.
That's true. I can add that to my resume.
I feel like you also asked about if I was worried if it would affect my like work as a coach there was, you've talked about this a lot. There was the imposter syndrome element to it too, especially this summer. I would be coaching people. I was also working for the Trevor Project at the time, which is the life-saving work that I mentioned I was doing at the time that was really intense. And I was literally saving lives on talking to people who were in the brink of crisis. Right. And I was coaching people through their mindful journey or trying to develop awareness. Right. meanwhile, I was suffering. And so there was a level of imposter syndrome. It's like, I'm supposed to be able to step outside of all this, like I'm trying to help other people do. And that was really hard. And then I think the element of the conversation that explains anxiety and that it's very much something I'm pretty much supposed to be experiencing was really helpful, right? Because it was like, there is nothing wrong with me. I'm just experiencing a very normal mind body reaction.
And you don't need to be perfectly well adjusted to be able to help other people. Like that is something that I have had to confront. And, you know, I'm constantly reminded that every therapist has to go to therapy themselves. There's no such thing as a perfectly well adjusted, finished with all of the self-work person out there. If there is, I mean, they're probably so boring. Like you said, your friend wouldn't want to talk to them. You know, they wouldn't want to spend time with them. But it's so important to realize that you don't have to put that pressure on yourself. You can also, it's so different to, you know, to take care of yourself. We naturally find it easier to take care of other people, which, you know, and in some ways that's great because that allows you to do your job and allows you to help people with your podcast. You know, you don't have to have all the answers. And I think that is where you'll be both most effective, because you are coming from a real authentic place. You're not coming from an intimidating point of, well, I've come out the other side and this is what you need to do. Like, we're all just figuring it out all of the time, and allowing for that, just accepting that, is just so liberating.
And I think that's part of the mental health revolution that we're seeing lately, is that you know, therapists and life coaches and yourself and authors and artists are coming forward and being like, this is what I'm suffering with. Because this whole like facade of the perfect mental health professional, I don't think is helping anyone. You know what I mean?
Because we can't relate to them, and we don't think of them as vulnerable people. We think of ourselves as intensely vulnerable and them as being closed off. And that is just like a recipe for disaster. We need to know that we can take down our barriers. And obviously, like, this is something like, I do a lot of talks with different companies. Like, I just did a talk with Google and Amazon and PwC and Twitter over the summer. And I've talked about the importance of vulnerability in the workplace. And we've often thought of it as something that negates professionalism, that you couldn't possibly be vulnerable and do your job well or succeed or get ahead. And I remember reading, I don't know if you ever watched The Hills, but do you remember Kelly Catrone?
No, I'm so sorry.
She was in The Hills and she was like kind of the villain in it. But she had, obviously I love my reality TV, she had a book called If You Have to Cry, Go Outside. And I remember reading it and trying so hard to internalize it and be like, you cannot be a sensitive person. You cannot be an anxious person. Your sensitivity, your anxiety, whatever, is not welcome in a professional. You'll get eaten up, chewed up and spat out. And that was the mantra for so long. And now it's like, hold on a second. When there's no room for vulnerability in the workplace, when a manager is afraid to show their vulnerability, or someone who's looking up to a manager is afraid to show their vulnerability, nobody wins. Someone will have imposter syndrome. Someone will feel intimidated. Someone will feel like they can't say when they're having an issue. No problems will be resolved. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's like another, that's my latest kind of thing, is really like trying to help people understand the place for vulnerability in a professional context, in particular, to help us problem solve and to help us realize that that's what is common to all of us. And when we start accepting that and start even embracing that, like, life just improves in so many ways, whether it's reducing anxiety or helping the bottom line of a business.
Yeah. I mean, I don't recommend that people go cry in their offices, but this is not a business setting either. But like last week I was in Nashville recording an album. And I, you know, halfway through the week, I had, for the first half of the week, I felt like the project was just getting away from me a little bit. And there was something I needed to say, but it was very confrontational. And I had some anxiety around it. And I was, I'm a very emotional creature. And then on the like midway through the week, I started to say what I needed to say, and I was proud of myself for doing so, but it came with some crying. Mm-hmm. And everyone in the room was surprised to see me crying, but I was not, because I cry very easily. But I was like, but you know, even that moment of vulnerability, I spent the whole rest of the week really grateful for it, because it sort of established the grounds on which to then make the album that I wanted to make. And it made communication so much easier there out, because I was no longer sort of like beating around this bush that was eating away at me. You know what I mean? It was like, It was very, it was a very hard, vulnerable moment, but it was so important.
But what happens there is that you are instantly dissolving the imposter syndrome because you're closing the gap between how you really felt and what you were putting out to the world.
Yeah.
And absolutely. That helps everything. That helps the imposter syndrome. It helps anxiety. It helps. It's just, it's, you know, it's such a quick fix, but it's a hard tightrope to walk, is to try to cross that path between how we feel internally and what we're putting out to the world. And I think that's been my biggest, I suppose, skill that I've learned, is like, I don't really struggle with imposter syndrome anymore because I have no problem in voicing the gaps in my knowledge or where I'm strong, where I'm not strong. And I do so with confidence because I know that I'm a human being and I know that other people are struggling to accept their, you know, fallibility, and life is easier when we all do. But obviously, like you know, you and I, this is our work now. This is what we do. We are entrenched in it every single day. And for so many people, it's a really hard road to take, to kind of look inward and do the work on yourself and get this comfortable with yourself and get comfortable with the discomfort. And, you know, it's not easy, but it's like the greatest work you'll ever do.
That's one of the reasons I wanted you to help me tell my story with this, because I knew that even in this conversation alone, there were a few moments where I felt like I was oversharing maybe, or not sharing clearly enough or succinctly enough, or, you know, cause I've never talked about my anxiety before. And you nip that right in the bud right away. I feel like you have no tolerance for imposter syndrome anymore. And it's in the best way. You know what I mean? It's great.
I know. Cause it's just like, I mean, it's just really holding people back, and it's, if you can get through it, it's, you know, and I can see that you're working through it at the moment. But how, I mean, I feel like I probably didn't help in any way, but was it helpful just to vocalize some of what you've been feeling? And
oh yeah, so important. I mean, my main mission was just that I wanted to talk about it. I, as an artist at this point in my career, it's hard to go through something and not share it.
I know,
Or like, and then of course there becomes the element of, I think it's the Brené Brown quote, vulnerability without boundaries is not vulnerability, right? So I was like, how do I want to talk about this? You know, what is my initial language around this going to be? And I was like, I think the podcast is a good place for it. And then I was like, I think Carolyn would be a great guest. And yeah, sure enough, it felt really good. I feel really comfortable. My armpits are a little sweaty, but I think that's a good sign.
I think so. Well, look, you know, as much as it's never easy to be vulnerable, because the definition of vulnerability means kind of being open to attack. And there's a fear of judgment and fear of putting yourself out there. But I really hope and I believe that when people hear you share your experience and talk about it, you will have given them so much reassurance and comfort and strength in knowing that, you know, someone as successful as you, because someone could look at your Instagram and be like, whoa, this guy has achieved so much, he's doing so much, he is so, you know, accepting of himself, he owns himself, they look up to you. And, you know, that is so powerful. So the fear of the vulnerability is always worse than the reality. I think that the fear is bigger than the reality. So like, I always say, like, let your faith be bigger than your fear.
Right. Yeah. No. And especially because everything we're talking about, as we said at the very beginning, it's just, there's nothing to be afraid of. It should be talked about. It's everything that I've gone through this past year, even if it was really hard, it is very, very normal.
Yeah. And I mean, if anyone was to ever react unfavorably towards it, it really is more of a reflection on their discomfort with their own vulnerability and, you know, maybe their background, their context that helped that allows that person to think there's something wrong with it, you know. So there's always a reason for someone to react negatively to someone sharing their vulnerability, and it's never you as a person sharing, it's never your problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so here we go, final five. What is the happiest part of your daily routine?
Putting my baby to bed when he's in my arms and I'm giving him his bottle and he's quiet and calm, and yeah, just knowing that we've done another day, but also knowing that I'm going to get to go put him down to bed and relax.
I've yet to listen to your episodes of your podcast about the anxiety that came with postpartum.
Yeah, that was a big one. I didn't expect that to come at me, because I thought, as we have said, I thought I kind of had it all figured out, and I had this pressure to be like, well, you've written the book on it now, so you better have it all figured out. And hormonally and everything just kind of fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
So, but I'm all good now.
Yeah. You can only give one book as a gift. What book do you give and why?
Oh, I it's a bit cliche, but I really do love Eat, Pray, Love.
Oh, wow. I was not, that threw me for a curveball.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you took me off guard there. So there's probably so many better, cooler books I should recommend, but I just feel like it's a book that I just can go back to so often. And there's just so many little pearls of wisdom in it that just sort of sit well with me. Yeah. I'm probably going to lose major street cred now for saying that.
Yeah, everyone's going to stop listening to your podcast.
Yeah,
now.
I'm done.
Name a thing, an activity, or a person that helps you learn about yourself.
Podcasting, an activity that helps me learn about myself, for sure. Being, you know, open and having conversations with different people from all over the world, and always learning something. Like, I'm always learning new things about how to like better manage anxiety all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I wish I had to put that in my book, but it'll just be more books. So definitely podcasting has been like, it's such a pleasure. And it's actually kind of how I make my living now as well.
Yeah. And it sort of forces you to ask yourself tough questions like, who am I? What do I want to say? Like what's important to me? Right.
Exactly.
Which are all really like self-defining questions, I suppose.
Yeah.
What do you love the most about yourself?
I love how these days I am so accepting of myself as I am, how I am, however I am, whatever day it is. I think for so long I tried to be another kind of person. I tried to fit into a mold that I didn't fit into. I tried to go with the flow and yeah, just in so many ways, I just resisted my nature. Yeah. And you know, now I'm unapologetic about what I like, what I don't like, what works for me, what doesn't, what I think suits me and what doesn't. Like, for example, I remember just torturing myself over not being the kind of person who like loved going to a 5-day festival and camping and just, I was like, and I thought for so long that it was just my anxiety holding me back. And I thought, well, you're like, you're an idiot. You need to get over this. This is what cool people do. And one of the chapters that I had in my book, and one of the big questions I always ask people to ask, is know the difference between your personality and your anxiety. If anxiety wasn't in the picture, is this something that you would want to do? If the answer is still no, then it's your personality talking and it's your nature talking. And to be honest, if I didn't feel any anxiety in that situation, I still have no desire to be knee deep in mud, staying in a shitty tent. So, and that's like just one example of me trying to be a kind of way that I wasn't for so long. And now I'm like, hell no. My husband goes off to festivals by himself. I'm like, I will go to a nice spa break, please. Thank you very much. But yeah, just that ability to just be like, yeah, this is me. Take it or leave it.
I love that. Are you introverted?
I think I am a bit of both. And I think the word is ambivert. I charge inwardly. I need to spend a lot of time alone. I love my own company. I don't particularly like being on the phone all evening when I have free time, especially now with the baby. I just want to completely switch off. But then I am quite a social person and I need to share, like we said in earlier on. So I think it's a bit of both. I think sometimes I need to fill my tank with people and sometimes it drains my tank. It depends on the day.
Yeah. I can relate to that. I recently saw a GIF on Instagram that was like a man, like it was an actual news story. Man got lost hiking and for 24 hours and wasn't found because he didn't answer the phone for a rescue service because it said unknown. And I was like, I would totally do that because I'm not going to answer the phone if it says unknown. what are you celebrating about our time together today?
Just the opportunity to connect with you from across the ocean and to have such a really authentic conversation with someone. Like, isn't it amazing that like we've never met and we've so had cool. probably a deeper conversation than you would have with some people that you would consider yourself so close to.
Yeah.
And how powerful that is, and just stripping back the layers of pretense and getting right to it, and how lucky I am that this is something I get to do.
Yeah. And you do such a beautiful job at it. So thank you.
Oh God. I was like, I've not prepared for this in any way. I have no question prepared. I'm just going to hope that we have a good conversation.
It's in your blood at this point.
Oh God. I don't know. I would love to know is there anything coming up for you that people can see you in or hear you in or follow you in or.
Yeah, I definitely encourage them to check out the podcast. It's the Gay Life Coach podcast. It's wellness for the queer community. We tackle all different topics from a queer wellness-focused lens, usually with a tinge of mindfulness, awareness, presence, because that's my wheelhouse. But we try and look at it from as many angles as possible. And then, yeah, I did mention that I was down in Nashville recording an album, but I don't have too many details about that yet. And yeah, that's all I can tease at the moment.
Amazing. That's a good teaser. I have nothing to tease. I'm literally just like, I put on my Instagram stories, me making a cup of tea the other day. That is how, that's where I'm at the moment. So not a whole lot going on over here.
How can folks connect with you?
So Instagram is the best place. And I'm very uncreatively just my name, at Caroline Foran on Instagram. And then from there, I have like links to my podcast, my books, my journal. I share lots of different quotes and things that I find helpful. They're all very bullshit free, is what I like to say. And then, I mean, most of the time I'm just documenting my life as a new parent, which is very unriveting.
I've been, your family is beautiful. I recently started following you, right? Because I got into your podcast and then I was like, mm-hmm. Who is this perfect family in my feed? And I was like, oh, it's Caroline and her beautiful kid.
He is. I mean, he's a beautiful, beautiful child, but he is like, he's a hurricane. He's a little... like crazy, like tornado in the house, but he's great. He's so full of energy and it actually hurts my eyes sometimes to look at him. I think he's that beautiful. And I don't know if that's just me being super biased or if I just made a really cute baby.
No, he's a really cute baby.
Thank you so much for this. It's been such a pleasure. And I know that people listening on my end will really appreciate you sharing your story and they'll be like, oh, they're so sick of me talking about my story. But so hopefully on your end, people will appreciate hearing from me, but it's been a lot of fun.
I totally appreciate your time. And yeah, thank you for coming on. I think it was a great talk.
Thank you so much, Brian. I so appreciate it.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.